Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, February 17th. On this President's Day 2020, let's talk about the Democrats who want to be elected president in 2020 and their money. And I don't just mean Michael Bloomberg. Last Thursday, while most of the political media was focused on the results of the New Hampshire primary and the pivot to Nevada and South Carolina, Joe Biden was in New York City, which doesn't vote until April 28th. It was to attend two big donor fundraisers. Pete Buttigieg wasn't in Nevada or South Carolina either that day. He was in Indianapolis Thursday for the same reason, San Francisco on Friday. Now, Tom Steyer spent the most on TV ads in New Hampshire. Did you know that? But it didn't actually turn out to buy him very much, so money doesn't always buy you political love. Bloomberg's overwhelming ad blitz, however, seems to be producing more results. At least in the polls, he hasn't been tested yet at the polls. Elizabeth Warren, according to ABC, is focusing a dwindling war chest on South Carolina and Nevada with almost no Super Tuesday ads running in Super Tuesday states, except on the radio in Maine. While various news organizations report on an increasingly likely scenario of Mike Bloomberg and Bernie Sanders being the last two candidates who can afford to remain standing, but based on entirely opposite financial models. Let's talk about some of these things. With us is Maggie Severns, who covers money and politics for Politico. Her latest article is about none of the above. It's about black donors who are staying on the sidelines because they're not being motivated by any of the candidates to give money. Hi, Maggie. Happy wannabe President's Day. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
There's a lot of press about black voters right now, but almost never about black donors. Who were you reporting on for this piece?
Yeah, you know, there's actually a group of people, business leaders, a lot of them. Some of them are involved in a group that's largely based out of New York called the Black Economic Alliance. And these are people, a lot of them had helped spend money for Barack Obama in 2008 and 2012. It was interesting because people have been so excited earlier in this race about Kamala Harris and about Cory Booker. And since they have dropped out, they hadn't been getting as much outreach from the candidates, these donors. And the outreach that they felt like they had been getting, in some cases, they felt like the candidates just weren't getting it. And I think for these donors, that leads them to have concerns that the Democratic candidates are going to fall flat among black voters. And so that's kind of where that came from, is a concern. You know, both these people are saying, I don't think I'm going to give anyone my money, but also I'm not sure that these Democrats are up to the charge.
Let's go through some of the individual candidates in relation to some of the black donors you were reporting on. You described donors saying Buttigieg, besides having problems with his policing record and race as mayor of South Bend, also has trouble relating on an emotional level. How does that show itself in interactions with people, according to your reporting?
Yeah, so Buttigieg has set up a series of meetings with these donors in New York before, oftentimes when he's making trips for fundraisers, which you mentioned before, he'll stop before and after fundraisers and have these small sit-downs with six or seven folks and kind of present his plan. So he has this thing called his Douglas Plan to help black people. Mostly it's an economic plan. And people said, you know, it's not that he doesn't have policy plans or ideas. And, you know, Buttigieg can talk about the police shooting that happened in South Bend, but he doesn't really seem like he's someone who understands how to relate to our community or to, you know, talk about struggles that people have had. And if he can't do that with a black business community, how is he going to do that with black voters who are really, really further away culturally than him, than we are?
So that's a little on Buttigieg. You also reported on moderate black business people who donate to political campaigns not feeling welcome to help fill the Sanders or Warren coffers. Who said what about that?
Sanders and Warren haven't been raising big donor money at all. They're doing all small dollar donor money. And I think that as part of that, as they're running these kind of anti-corporate campaigns, they're not trying to get any elites to help their campaign. And so they haven't kind of reached out to this community, which sees themselves as both kind of funders of campaigns, but also a little bit, you know, thought leaders or, you know, influencers who can help guide campaigns in a good direction here. So there's this interesting dynamic where some people think that they could maybe be helpful to Sanders or Warren, but just haven't been asked.
The scenario that some people predict of Sanders and Bloomberg being the last candidate standing based on money, where's Buttigieg in that scenario? Because he's got real money, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. You know, going back to what I was just talking about, he's a candidate who hits the big dollar fundraising and he has a grassroots base. So he's been able to do pretty well. He's not quite as, obviously, he's no Michael Bloomberg. No one is. He's kind of a step behind Bernie Sanders, I would say, who's really been the star of the non-billionaire candidates, but he's regularly raised, you know, $25 million a quarter. He's been able to build out a big campaign. And a lot of that is because people, both, you know, big donors and people across the country, these grassroots donors have gotten excited about Buttigieg. And I think that was a real early sign that he had real support that we've then seen in Iowa and seen in New Hampshire.
What are Elizabeth Warren's finances like at this point?
You know, she was able to start off this year by transferring some money from her Senate campaign into her account. And then she really leaned hard into building a grassroots movement, building a lot of small dollar donors that have helped build up her campaign. And that's eased off, I would say, as some of the Elizabeth Warren excitement has started to die down. She didn't have quite as much money coming in at the end of last year, and we'll find out more next week. But she has been able to build a pretty big campaign. You know, Elizabeth Warren has one of the biggest field staffs of any candidate. So you're not seeing her buy as many television ads as other people, but she has more than 1,000 people on the ground working for her campaign across the country. So she's been able to build out a pretty big campaign, even though she's not quite bringing in as much money as Buttigieg or Sanders.
Nevada votes this Saturday. Bloomberg is not competing there. So other than from him, what do you think is the balance of what Nevadans are seeing in terms of advertising right now?
Yeah, so in Nevada, Bernie was the first person to go up on air there. So people are seeing some ads from him, I believe. Other folks who have bought since, I think Buttigieg has bought some ad time. You're not seeing as much as we're getting on in the race because some of these candidates kind of blew it all in the first two, if I'm being honest. Mm-hmm. One interesting thing that we're seeing going on is that because of that, some of these outside groups are starting to go up on the air. So there's actually this group Vote Bets, which supports Pete Buttigieg. It's a pro-veterans organization. All the candidates have said, you know, I don't want a single candidate super PAC. I want this to be a real, a real year of the people. But Pete Buttigieg allowed this organization Vote Bets to support his campaign. And they're going up in the air in Nevada, airing pro-Pete ads, talking about his record. So that's helping him there. And then there's actually a pro-Israel super PAC that is anti-Bernie Sanders. And so they're running some anti-Bernie Sanders ads there. I don't think it's a huge amount of money, but it's pretty controversial because there just hasn't been a lot of negative advertising in this race. People are staying pretty positive. And I think that people see this threat of Bernie. He's actually been doing really well in Nevada. And so they feel like they need to drive his numbers down.
Is it becoming harder for you as a money and politics reporter to measure who's advertising how? Because it's not as straightforward as just TV commercials anymore. There's all this digital micro-targeting. Is it hard for you to see?
Yeah, so there's this huge debate right now over how to disclose and what to do about the digital ads. Some of them, Facebook and Google, have voluntarily put up these databases that we can search. But then you're kind of relying on the people who are advertising to do the right thing and disclose properly in the databases. Of course, the Federal Election Commission, which is the federal authority, has its own rules for advertising, but they haven't been updated in well over a decade. And that agency is pretty much broken down. It's short several commissioners. It needs to do anything. There's not a lot going on there these days. So it creates a lot of big challenges. And if people aren't advertising on Facebook or Google, if they're advertising anywhere else on the internet, there's not actually a lot someone like me can do to track where that money came from. So the short, you know, that was a long answer. The short answer is yes. There's a lot of room for mischief and for strange spending and for kind of shadowy groups. You know, we just saw another anti-Bernie Sanders website go up the other day that's being run by, it's very clearly illegal. It's being run by a LLC that should not be allowed to run political ads, but there's no way for me to figure out who's doing it. So there's a lot going on out there that probably shouldn't be.
How do you go looking for that stuff to the extent that you can find it? Do you go poking around online? Do you sign up for things and see whose ads follow you around the internet? How do you go looking for it?
Oh, all of the above. And I rely on, you know, generous people who find, you know, see something and email it to me or find it on Twitter. We look at every new super PAC that's formed has to register with the FEC. So we keep an eye on registrations and things that come in. So it's really pretty much every trying to keep your eyes open on the internet, I would say, but it's not a perfect science at all. And it always leaves you wondering what you're missing.
Just as I was going to ask you about the next candidate on my list, in comes a call from June in White Plains, who wants to ask you about her too. June, you're on WNYC with Maggie Severance, who reports on money in the presidential race for Politico. Hi, June.
Hi, how you doing? Okay. I have a question about why you have not once mentioned Amy Klobuchar. She has been surging, and from day one, I believe the media has been guilty of narrowing the field and ignoring her, when I believe she's a candidate that can truly win. So why are we not discussing her possibilities?
We are discussing her next. How about her fundraising? We know that she got a big, small donor take after her successful debate performance the Friday before New Hampshire. Is that continuing?
Yeah, so she hasn't said whether that's continuing, but I think that what you generally see is that when a candidate starts surging, small donors start looking at them. And Amy has also been on a large fundraising tour as well. You mentioned, you know, Biden and Pete and other people like Klobuchar are trying to do the same. She was in New York the day after she was in New Hampshire trying to raise money last week. And so I think that hopefully, you know, she's done, her campaign is kind of one scale smaller than someone like Warren's. She really needs to be scaling up, especially heading into Super Tuesday when you're going to have 14 different states. You have a state like Texas where it costs millions of dollars just to, you know, get on the air and have people see a television ad. So that's the real challenge that's facing Klobuchar right now is, you know, she could run a campaign in Nevada. She can run a campaign in South Carolina, but after that, is she really going to be able to compete in these big states? She's got the fundraising really needs to be coming in. And, you know, hopefully she can do that if she wants to keep running for president. Otherwise, you know, I think we'll see soon how things are going.
Can you describe the Bernie Sanders small donor juggernaut? I mean, what are some of the numbers of, like, how many donors, average amounts, what's the top dollar he's willing to accept, things like that?
Yeah, so Sanders was the first candidate this cycle to surpass having more than a million individual donors to his campaign, which he surpassed months ago, actually. And we're kind of waiting for him to get to the point where he has 2 million individual donors. You know, he hit the million donor mark a while ago. I think Warren was the second candidate to hit that mark pretty recently, but she got there months after him. His average donation is, last cycle, it was around the $28 a month mark. I heard it was a little bit lower this time around. So he's really, his average donation is very small. And Sanders actually has done something really different from other candidates, which is he's encouraged some of these really, really excited Bernie supporters to sign up to give monthly recurring donations too. It's funny, they give those donations on like the 15th of every month. So when we're looking at, we study ActBlue a lot, which is kind of the platform that Democrats give through. And we can see this surge of money going to Sanders on the 15th of every month because everyone's giving their dollars to Bernie that day. All of this kind of combined has allowed him to bring in millions and millions of dollars to the point where he spent $50 million in the last 3 months of 2019 alone, which was, I think, about $20 million more than most of his competitors. So that's, it's really a bigger campaign than someone like Warren or someone like Biden is running. You know, he was the first person to reserve ads in California and Texas. He has hundreds and hundreds of staff. It's a really impressive operation that he's built.
What are the actual Bloomberg numbers as of your last check? I mean, this is completely unprecedented, but how much is he blowing away everyone else by in spending? Do you have it at your fingertips?
So I know that at the end of December, he had put spent about 200 million out of his campaign account, which to compare to everyone else, I mean, I think that quarter, everyone else was a fraction of that. I mean, in the last 3 months of last year, Bernie Sanders brought in about $35 million and Mike Bloomberg brought in about 200. I think it's more than double that at this point. He's really, you know, and he's going to spend, I think, about $1 billion on this campaign at least.
Bloomberg is refusing to release his tax returns until after Super Tuesday. Is that right?
There are two different transparency disclosures that Bloomberg will release. One is his personal financial disclosure, which definitely will not be out until after Super Tuesday. And that will give us kind of basic information on his finances. And one is his tax returns, which he really could do at any time. He's said that he'll release them. He hasn't said exactly when. We're definitely not expecting them until after Super Tuesday. Every other candidate in the race has released tax returns. Tom Steyer, who's also a billionaire, has put like thousands of pages of tax returns up on his website. He wants to be really transparent. And Bloomberg's just not playing that game.
If he's running as the not Donald Trump rich guy, why shield his taxes from public view?
You know, he's never been a fan of being forthcoming about his wealth. I think the stated reason is that it's complicated, and it definitely is. He has a lot of, I would imagine, a lot of holdings, a lot of things he has to sort through. But I know that as Mayor Bloomberg, he would release his tax returns. But the way he would do that is he would have these heavily redacted documents in a room, and reporters were allowed to, you know, once a year, go into the room, sit down, take notes. They couldn't photograph anything. They couldn't photocopy anything, and then leave. And that was their look at Bloomberg's tax returns. So it was kind of, you know, a look, if you want to say that, but not a real release. So I think that there are just some transparency measures that he's chosen to kind of blow through over time because he can write his own rules a little bit as someone who is rich and can afford to do things like bypass Iowa and New Hampshire, skip Democratic debates, and run his own campaign.
And I know we're in primary season, so we're talking about Democrats, but how does Trump stack up by these measures, say compared to Bloomberg or compared to Bernie Sanders?
Mm-hmm. You know, Trump has raised more than $150 million for his campaign. It's a huge operation. He actually filed for re-election sooner than any other president in history and had a campaign and started raising money into it. And he uses that to pay for his rallies when he goes to states. Last weekend, he was at the Daytona 500. He really has a pretty big operation, and it's also a big spending operation. They're using that money to do all kinds of things. They've renovated the Republican National Committee. Mentioned they throw these big rallies all around the country. They did a Super Bowl ad. You know, only Trump and Bloomberg did Super Bowl ads. You can tell that someone has a lot of money when they're spending, you know, $1 million a pop to air an ad in the Super Bowl. So he really does have a huge operation, and they're ambitious about the amount of money that they want to raise this year so that they can, by the time Democrats have a nominee and that person is ready next summer, Trump wants to be just leaps and bounds ahead of them, which is funny because in 2016, he ran a campaign that raised less money and spent less money than his opponent, Hillary Clinton, and managed to win anyway.
Last thing, and it's off the presidential race. You wrote an article about a month ago about what I think is a very important topic this year that risks getting too overlooked: the battle for control of state legislatures. And for people who don't have their heads around this, it's so important this year because it's a census year, and they who control state legislatures often get to redistrict their way into control of Congress after the census is done. We remember what happened in 2010, the year of the Tea Party and big backlash against Obama's first 2 years, and the Republicans rolled in so many state legislatures and took control of so many state houses that they didn't have. And then came the redistricting after the census was done. So what's this Democratic Party fund that you reported on focused on state legislatures?
Yeah, so there are a few different funds that focus on state legislatures. I report on the Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee, which is the kind of central committee that's aiming to raise and spend $50 million this year just on these Democratic state legislative races, which, like you said, are a big deal because they will help after the census. It's these state legislative chambers who can have a ton of leeway. You know, it's really whoever has the most gall and, you know, the willingness to redraw the map in the strangest way can sit down and really draw a congressional map in a lot of these states. And so they are have this really ambitious project. This is the committee to target state legislative races in up to, I think, it'll be up to like 12 or 13 different chambers. And if they can do that, it could really change the next 10 years of Congress, because for the last 10 years, Democrats have been at a huge disadvantage in a lot of states. And they've been fighting both court battles and then, you know, fighting these uphill battles every time they are trying to win seats in states like North Carolina, where they're just at a, you know, or Virginia, where they're at a massive disadvantage. So it'll be interesting. You know, obviously the presidential race has a huge effect on what happens down ballot, but so do special elections, which are happening throughout the year in these small areas. We just have one in Texas. And so do, you know, the ability of these committees to really engage people who are super interested in politics right now to go out and canvas and kind of not have Democrats be blindsided like they were in 2010 by this effects of state legislative races on Congress.
Maggie Severns covers money and politics for Politico. Great job. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, we want to invite you in on the conversation too. If you've got a question about a national news item, whether it's something you want to know about the election or the Trump administration or anything else you think might fall under the national politics umbrella, give us a call and leave us a message with your name, where you're calling from, and your question. We'll collect those and keep them in our pocket for when I'm speaking with someone who can give you a good answer. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255. 844-745-TALK. See you tomorrow.